Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark. That's right, the Jonathan Taylor Thomas of the paranormal. Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Yes, back here on another episode of Bob After Dark on WJOB if you're listening live, or maybe in a podcast platform if you're listening later, as well as we found out last week, YouTube.
We are now on YouTube Weekly, which is super exciting.
Just go to WJOB 1230. Type that onto YouTube, WJOB 1230. It takes you right there. We should be on right now. And here's the thing, Bob. I guess I have to... Now I got to be in charge of seeing if there's anybody commenting on there as well. So I'll have to pull up my screen too here. Right? But yeah, excited to be back. The veil is thickening once again, Bob.
The veil is the veil's back to thickening up a little bit after the weekend. Now it'll go back to being thick again until Yuletide.
How was your Halloween?
My Halloween was a good time. I spent it pretty quiet. Me and Vixen enjoyed our day, and then I did a paranormal meetup.
A paranormal meetup?
Yeah, so me, Ghostly Podcast, which would be Pat Rebecca, Jack Chavez, Rob Tillian, and Vix, we all went out to a bar, and we sat around and talked about spooky topics for a while.
Hey, that sounds like a spooky good time, Bob. I mean, what more can you ask for in a Halloween? And now Mariah Carey lingers throughout the malls of America.
Yeah, I know. I was listening to the radio on the way here. I can't say what radio station.
The Enemy.
But they're already doing their 24 hours, 7 days a week Christmas carols until Christmas.
You know, they should. Why not? I guess this is America. They could do what they want. But I am checking in on the YouTube, guys. Do not worry. Do not be concerned. I will catch up on some comments here. But Halloween, Bob, came and went. And then, of course, next to you, man that's no stranger to the holiday, Chuck Poland. Chuck, how was your Halloween?
It was fantastic. I was going to ask, so if he's Jonathan Taylor Thomas, does that make me your Richard Karn? I'm your Al Borland.
The Al Borland, your sidekick. Yes, there you go for the night.
No, it was fun. You know, I renewed my AMC subscription for the month. I watched the original Halloween until my wife could stand it no more. I think we watched it maybe 8 times, which again, Halloween, perfect Halloween movie. They're playing it on Halloween night, and a few other things. My son was really disappointed. They were playing all the Halloweens except for Halloween 3. Why, I don't know.
Some say one of the best.
I would say it's one of the best non-Halloween movies of the Halloween franchise.
It is the best Halloween film of the franchise.
Come on now. Halloween 666 is the best.
Oh, no.
The director's cut.
Oh, jeez.
But again, we don't want to rehash that argument again.
No.
This could be a whole episode, right?
This could be a whole thing. But we only have an hour, so.
St. John, I know, is passing out the good candy.
No, you know what? The kids are getting to that point where the kids are old enough. Like, Dad, we don't need you to walk us anymore. You've seen my son. The guy's like 6'8". He was the black and white clown. I mean, so he did the part well. You remember him as the Yeti.
Yes.
He did the clown, and he did a good job of scaring people. And so, yeah, we hung out at the house, watched some scary movies, made sure that nobody made off with my decorations and my bowls of candy.
You're very cool, Svengoolie inflatable.
We have my giant Svengoolie out front, keeping an eye on the neighborhood for us.
Gotta give a shout out to James, Heather, Windstorm, asking when you'll be back out to Wisconsin. We got to map that out there, Bob. We'll take Chuck to Wisconsin with us.
You know what?
I can always go for some cheese.
If DeMar's Cheese Castle legitimately books us up there for a book, like a signing or an appearance, I'll go back there.
Let's do it. We'll do a podcast.
I think they're about to open a Bucky's up there. I mean,
they are. Yeah, they are opening a Bucky's.
Just do it right there in the Bucky's parking lot.
The Bucky's parking lot. It'll Bucky's be and Bob. Somewhere.
Bucky's After Dark.
There you go.
All right. So if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark,
where have you been? If this is your first
If this is your first time of watching or listening to Bob After Dark, where you're your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural things that go bump in a night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite non-Christmas holiday movie that happens to take place in November. Thanksgiving movie. There you go.
The only one I could think of is all-time great. Trains, Planes, and Automobiles.
That's
an
excellent choice.
Come on. I mean, really, there's not a lot of Thanksgiving
movies. There is Thanksgiving.
And what is it?
That's got the killer turkey.
There is.
Then you have Thanksgiving.
Which is the horror movie that came out a couple years ago, right?
Eli Roth.
Yeah.
That movie is pretty cool.
But I'm looking for more of a heartwarming flick, I guess.
Mario Brown. Charlie Brown's Thanksgiving.
Not really a movie, though.
It's a special.
Special. And not as really proclaimed as, say, the Great Pumpkin or the Christmas special, just because, their Thanksgiving dinner was jelly beans and popcorn and whatnot. But I'm going to go with the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Bob.
That's a good choice.
Those aren't pillows.
Yes. Today we are capping off last month's topic because we had to skip a month. We had to skip a week in October.
Yeah.
And this was a Count Panic's pick.
Well,
this happens once every so often where Count Panic's like, can we do an episode about fill in the blank? And I don't have the heart to tell that face no.
Well, Chuck, let me tell you.
You give him one episode a year, and then that's the one episode you're not on the radio.
Well, I mean, Chuck, come on. Let me tell you. Bob planned this month of October as celebrating paranormal researchers, investigators, and, of course, we had some great guests, Jack Chavez, Pat and Rebecca, Neil, of course, from Graveside Paranormal. But he was like, boy, oh boy, I don't have a topic for the show coming up. It's like, you're missing one of the greatest paranormal
the godfather
of here in our backyard.
Right. The godfather of the paranormal. Absolutely.
Yeah. So first things first, though, we are going to look at the lore of the week. First things first is weird, spooky news of the
potatoes.
Week. Yes, that's the potatoes of the episode, the bread of the episode, if you will. I have a couple news stories across the world that I got and searched for, one of which came from Chuck here tonight.
Oh.
So we're going to look at a couple news stories, and we're going to dive into the lore of the week, which we'll get to here in just a moment, which I know everybody's excited about. But the first article I want to tell us is comes from the New York Post, and no, this is not about the election. I just wanted to say
we're not doing election coverage.
We are not doing election.
So if you're tuning in for election coverage, whatever you voted for, it probably lost. Maybe it won. Whatever. Tune in tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Tune in tomorrow morning for, don't you have a morning show tomorrow?
No, only on Monday.
You got to wait
on
Monday.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah, I'll be there on Monday. Full coverage on Monday.
All right. So this one comes from the New York Post. A.V. Loeb criticized Sean Duffy for answering Kim Kardashian's question about the comet while not providing scientists and elected officials with much needed data. Scientists worried that 3i Atlas comet could be alien tech. Invites Kim Kardashian to join research team. Hashtag panic steak first.
So she's going to join the research team, right? So
yes.
Technically, we could do an episode about her, paranormal researcher. But
Do you think we could get her on the show to be an interview?
Yeah, why not? Let's aim high. But you know what? Good for her, right? She's doing maybe what she loves. But who wouldn't want to go on a ghost investigation with Kim Kardashian? Chuck, I know you would.
Hashtag Chuck's
So the thing is, Kim has spent the last few years studying in California to become a lawyer. And as it turns out, she was relying very heavily on AI to pass the bar.
Don't we all?
And it went as you'd expect. So now that she apparently has probably failed the bar, she needs to find a new job. So, you know, lawyer, space exploration, alien specialist. Why not? I mean, she's done everything else. Why not? Put her in charge of NASA? Why not? At this point? Like, what's the worst that could
send
happen?
Send her to space.
Kim Kardashian in charge of NASA.
To the moon.
To the moon.
All right. Our next story comes to us from not our pal Tim Benal, but Alec Fernandez of Coast to Coast AM. Company takes credit for UFOs over New Jersey and raises more questions. The swarms of unidentified aircraft over New Jersey late last year were classified tests approved by the military, according to a leak from an elite tech summit. A protected source told the New York Post how one contractor claimed responsibility for the mysterious flying objects while began baffling Garden State residents in November of 2024. You remember that big UFO scare in Jersey last year? Well, that was us, an employee of a contractor allegedly said. The Army UAS launched an effects summit and is in an exclusive gathering in the military's top brass and the national's best private contractors. During the event, the unnamed contractor also demonstrated a manned aerial craft with a unique design that makes it difficult to detect from a certain angles. This potentially explains why so many reported the New Jersey UFOs vanishing suddenly while zipping across the sky. Although this alleged admission answers some questions, it raises several others, such as why the scale of tests were so large and why there was an utter lack of transparency that confused even the state's top lawmakers and the FBI. The densely populated test area also has some wondering what the purpose of these exercises were. Hashtag panics take first.
Yeah, I mean, come on. There's something going on there, Bob. Something we really got to look into. I don't believe all they're saying here, but it's a demands a lot.
Count Panic's calling a cover-up.
Listen, we're not a conspiracy show, right, Chuck?
We're not a conspiracy.
Not till midnight.
We don't do conspiracy theories here on Bob.
No, we are not a conspiracy theory show. But I say all the time, I appreciate the work that some of the conspiracy theorists work on their like research. Like, some of it is incredibly impressive, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
No. None of us are here, right? None of us? But
no, not at all. Tune in Mondays.
But, you know, Bob, it sounds like maybe it could be something. Maybe.
Chuck's take.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking, so I have relatives in New Jersey. I think you guys remember, they saw it, they filmed it, they sent me copies. I was out there over the summer when it was happening.
Yeah.
I think I went out there late in the summer, like middle of the summer, right at the tail end of when it was happening every night. But I mean, definitely I talked to people out there. I talked to people all over the state that had seen it. So again, it's one of those interesting stories that it's the biggest thing in the world and it just kind of goes away. But I think this idea of some sort of drone project is the most likely explanation. There were all kinds of theories about drones chasing UAPs, looking for lost nuclear material and all sorts of, I think this is one of those times I will give it to the non-conspiracy people. The simple answer is probably the right one.
Well, look at that.
I'm willing to compromise.
We have a rational one here.
Why not?
After dark.
Also, I'm a guest, so I'm being nice.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Dialing it back.
Our phone number is 219-845-1100. Give a call in and give us your take on it, folks. And as we move to our final news story of the week, this one comes to us from WSB TV Channel 2 Atlanta.
Atlanta, yes.
Wow, how did you know that?
I work with WSB. I just talked to them yesterday, as a matter of fact.
That is impressive.
I do that, yes. Friends WSB Atlanta.
That's impressive.
I talk to people all over the country, yeah.
Huh.
You're impressing blah blah blah.
You just knew that like blah, right blah, off blah. The right off the cuff. Blah. Anyway, so WSB TV Channel 2 Atlanta. A man in a scream mask terrorized Georgia family but said it was just a prank. Columbia County, Georgia, what a man described as a prank on a family member led to the homeowners calling 911. On a Saturday night, an East Georgia family said that a man wearing a scream mask from the movie Scream, armed with a knife, was looking into their home. According to an incident report obtained by Channel 2 Action News, the 22-year-old suspect turned off the lights connected to the security cameras and started messing with the front door. When deputies arrived, the man ran off into the woods because he reportedly had a knife. Deputies did not follow him and instead sent a drone into the woods. The suspect made his way back to the car, tried driving away, but the deputies stopped him. He told deputies that the homeowner is a family member and that he was just playing a prank. The report says that he told investigators he turned off the lights so that they would not see them on camera. Hmm. And the man was cited for disorderly conduct and driving a car without insurance and registration. I will tell you what would happen to this guy if he showed up to my home, but that's not the question we want to know. We want hashtag panic stake.
Yeah, I know. It's probably not the best to kind of terrorize people at home, you know, wearing a scream mask, ghost face mask, or whatever kind of mask. But the worst part, Bob, is he didn't have a license and registration. I mean, really, you're breaking the law there. You got to have your license, and you got to be registered.
Is that your takeaway from the story?
And yeah, he shouldn't have done that, but he does need to get a license. Maybe not with the mask on. He needs to take the mask off for the photo, but yeah, get registered, people.
All right, Chuck's take.
I basically had both of your takes. I had agreed with him. If you're going to do something stupid, make sure your license and your registration is up to date. Yeah. But also, yeah, there are certain places that, you, especially in the South, you pull a prank like that.
I am impressed that he didn't get, you know,
I was thinking about, remember a few years ago we had everybody was going around dressed as clowns?
Yeah.
And I remember there was like an outtakes video. There was videos on YouTube of when it backfired on these guys.
Yeah. Yes.
You show up as a clown in the middle of a park or something and they start chasing them. It's like, it's a joke.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of. It's like there's, you know, it's a fun thing to do, but do it to people that you know and do it to people you know that are relatively unarmed.
And this day and age, I wouldn't
brandishing a knife.
Yeah. But even this day and age, I wouldn't even ding dong ditch anymore. I mean, just you never know.
Well, again, even now, like you ding dong ditch, it shows up on the Ring app, yeah, and everybody's like, "Who is this kid?" And
they put you on a community.
You can't even get away with stuff like that anymore because next thing you know, the whole neighborhood's watching a video of you.
There's about
down the street
10 what's going on in Hammond pages, and you'll be on all of them.
You'll be on every single one.
Yeah.
All right, you guys ready for our final news story?
Sure.
This one's for Count Panic himself.
Yeah,
this one's a good one.
What you got?
New Loch Ness monster footage sighting could be the best, most convincing footage yet.
Really? Really?
This one comes to us from the New Jersey Digest. New footage recorded this week on a webcam overlooking Loch Ness appears to show evidence of the Loch Ness monster sighting, at least according to the man who discovered it. The webcam captured footage on Tuesday that appeared to show a dark shape rise above the surface of the water shortly after a tourist vessel passed through the frame. The object rose several feet before descending again, remaining visible for less than a minute in total. The event was captured on the Shoreline Lodge's webcam, one of the several cameras positioned around the Loch Ness for public viewing. The footage was first noticed by
one of those Scottish guys.
Yes.
Mr. Scottish guy.
Yes. A longtime Loch Ness monster hunter based in Ireland. That gentleman has logged more than two dozen sightings since 2018 and is one of the most consistent contributors to the official Loch Ness Monster Registry. His regular observations have made him a popular figure among Nessie hunters and enthusiasts. The latest finding has drawn fresh attention from the community. The most recent sighting adds to a long history of similar accounts at Loch Ness, where more than 1,000 alleged encounters with Nessie have been recorded. The creature, often described as having a long neck and serpentine form, remains one of the most persistent legends in modern folklore. In recent years, researchers have used sonar mapping and underwater microphones to search for signs of large aquatic life in the loch. Some recordings have determined deep rhythmic pulses and large moving shapes, but no conclusive evidence has been found to date. The Loch Ness Monster, often referred to as Nessie, is a mythical creature that allegedly inhabits Loch Ness, a deep freshwater lake in the Scottish Highlands. And the first reference to the mysterious beast date back to the 6th century. The modern-day Loch Ness monster craze began in the 1930s when a series of supposed sightings and photographs captured the attention worldwide. The most famous, called Surgeon's Photograph, was later revealed to be a hoax. Still, the photograph cemented Nessie's place in pop culture. In the years since, explorers and scientists have launched numerous expeditions using sonar, submarines, and underwater cameras. None have produced a definitive proof of the creature's existence. Despite this, the legend of Nessie lives on, fueled by folklore and a community of dedicated enthusiasts who remain convinced that something unknown still lives beneath the surface of the lock. Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, you know what, Bob? I'm a big fan of Nessie. Nobody's a bigger fan, as I put the phone call on hold there. But you know what? I'm going to say this is all. I got to look at the footage there, Bob. But
I'm sending it to you right now.
Okay, but I'm going to say, you know what? Who am I to doubt some Nessie footage? I'm going to say, even before I see it, Bob, I'm a big believer in Nessie. So I'm going to say it's true.
Hashtag Chuck's take.
I'm still trying to figure out how to pronounce that guy's name. His name is Owen, by the way. That's how you say Owen. That his name is Owen O'Fagan.
Yes.
Owen, yes. So his name is Owen. So Owen, so here's the thing that this is where I get a little critical of these things.
Oh no, it's important.
Do we not have the technology at this point? How do we not have a whole bunch of lasers and a whole bunch of ultrasound and sonic whatever? How do we not have that entire Loch Ness? I know it's a big place, but how do we not have the technology to just like have sonar running 24/7? How do we not have the technology to zero this in and figure this out?
And I saw it. It still seems kind of blurry, but you know, again, I'm going to go with Nessie. Gotta be Nessie.
But you're right. Like, how have we not figured this out?
You're all right, Chuck. We should have high def cameras.
You got a bunch of. It's like that joke about how we can get a picture of, you know, we can get this perfect picture of a different galaxy, but then when somebody robs a bank, it's a blurry photo. It's like the same thing with Nessie. It's like, when are we going to get her in focus?
Oh,
there's a Futurama bit about that, about how Nessie's always out of focus. But it's like, come on, we got the technology. Get her in focus.
Every cryptid has the same problem.
Maybe that's their. Maybe there that's their cloak.
We have a caller on
we
the
do.
Line.
We have a caller.
Caller, you're on the air.
I thought you were going to say E-I-E-I-E-I-O.
That's pretty close, honestly.
Hey, John, how you doing?
How did you know it was me, Bob?
Have that ability.
Because he knew I was on and he knew he wanted to talk to me. Hey, remember, this isn't my show. Be nice.
Hey, listen. No, you're the best on WJLB. You know that.
Thank you. Well, the second best after Bob.
Come on. Oh, thank you.
But come on.
Well, morning and night is,
politics, paranormal. Yeah.
There you go. But hey, so all these stories coming out in New Jersey, is this a coincidence that your in-laws are from New Jersey?
It's definitely a different place if you grew up in Northwest Indiana. Yeah, I mean, again, there's just a lot going on out there. You know, you've got a lot of the military bases. You've got all sorts of, you know, you've got this Langley, Virginia, not too far away, the CIA. You've got all kinds of military bases. So there's all kinds of stuff out that way that we don't see too often.
You just told the story about the Loch Ness monster being out there, right? I mean, in the papers.
There was one in upstate New York. Was that Champ?
Champy, yeah.
Yeah, Champy. Same idea. It's like, come on, let's get it together.
Yeah.
Let's get some ultrasound out there.
I never realized New Jersey was a hopping place to go to. But.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even the Pine Barrens, the Jersey Devil.
Yes.
I mean, all kinds of great stories out of New Jersey.
Yeah, sounds good. What this guy that appeared at that house with that mask and a knife, where was this at? In Georgia?
That was in Georgia.
So, Chuck, how long do you think that guy would last if he did that in the region? I don't think he'd be around, right? He wouldn't need to get the license registration. He would,
No.
Right. I'm just. We should just, preface. Yeah. Don't do that.
Just don't.
Even if you know the person, because this is not the. Don't do it. Just if you're gonna do it, make sure your license is up to date. But no, again, bad idea. I've seen it backfire in these guys that show up dressed like a clown at, you know, the middle of a basketball game or something, and everybody looks at him and chases him, and he's like, no, it's a joke.
But. And the thing with John, too, I know you're going to talk about Richard Crowe here. He was on a Richard Crowe ghost tour.
Was he?
Years ago. Remember when the stopped at Portillo's?
Yeah, I was. I remember. The only thing I remember was we stopped at Portillo's for something.
That's the only thing I remember.
Some guy wanted to jump off the bus, so he had to stop the bus to go to a Portillo's. I don't know, Count. Do you know who that guy was? Do you remember who that?
I don't know.
I think he was from the region too. If I'm not
maybe
mistaken.
Possibly from the region, but there was a break at Portillo's.
Kind of quiet there.
No, I'm just thinking about Portillo's now that you brought it up. But no, I mean, yeah, well, definitely, the Richard Crowe thing will be very interesting, and the fact that so many people in the region have gone on the tour, I think there's a lot of reminiscing there that we'll talk about in the next half hour.
Yeah, so I'm gonna let you guys go and talk about that, and we'll talk to you later then.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Chuck. I appreciate it.
Right. Well, Chuck didn't call in. No,
thank you, John, for calling in and talking to us.
Right,
you're welcome, though.
Jeez.
All right, take care. We got one more here, Bob.
We got another caller. Yep. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Bob. It's John from Wisconsin. Two Johns in a row.
Hey, John from Wisconsin. How you doing, pal?
Double John.
Good. I'm doing really well. I'm going to try to call in every week and be like the other John.
Ah, the two Johns.
Yeah. So I just wanted to call and show my appreciation for everything you guys are doing. I'm still trying to catch up on your podcast right now. I'm on the one about the history of the Ouija board.
Oh, what episode was that?
I was going to say, I don't even remember doing an episode about that.
We did.
That's episode 201, right after episode, 715.
Oh, don't start that argument again.
I think we're on episode 800 right now.
We skipped that many episodes.
Chuck, what episode are we on?
I'm on episode 206 or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and Panic, I wanted to ask Panic what he thinks about remaking Jaws. I want to bring that back up.
Yeah, how about that? It's about time for a new Jaws.
They should team up with Jaws to go up against bigger Jaws.
How was Jaws? Did you like Jaws 3 there?
Jaws 3D was a fantastic movie.
Yeah,
it's underappreciated.
See, John?
Bob, do you remember what you said, that Panic should play Jaws?
I could play Jaws.
And you could be Richard Dreyfuss. Bob, you could be Richard Dreyfuss.
I could be Richard Dreyfuss.
Bob looks like a young Richard Dreyfuss. And Chuck could be Dr. Lewis.
What's the guy in the boat? I would tell the story about the... I know this. Yeah, tell the Indianapolis
Quint.
Story. Quint.
Shoot the shark.
Quint.
Yeah. You could shoot Jaws with your gun there, yes.
And one more thing. You need to do another episode on the man-eating gourd.
There you go. You know, there's only so much information about the man-eating gourd. I think I've covered all of it in the episode.
Oh, that's true. But it was a good one.
Part two coming up.
Very good one. See, well, John, I appreciate everything you guys are doing.
Appreciate you, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John, from Wisconsin. Appreciate you.
And I know.
Yeah, have a good one.
You too. And I know John, I believe, he's in the chats there. We got a lot going on in chats. We got Heather. We got John. We got James there still. We got Arthur, our friend Art, Roxana Art, Club Cuyahoga fame.
Oh, our buddy Art.
He's a big fan of Chuck, too, as well. We have a Loch Ness Monster in Roxana in the Calumet River. His name is Stosh. Stosh, that's
you
my
know,
uncle's
when
name.
I was a kid in Roxana, there was an urban legend that there was some giant three-eyed fish monster in the Little Cow. But
They cleaned it up. You don't get those three-eyed fishes there. But Bob, I believe you're ready for the meat. Oh, the potatoes.
Yes.
Of the episode.
All right. So, Count Panic, are you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right. And Chuck, are you okay taking a quick break?
We're going to order pizza.
Yes.
Okay with you? They're going to deliver it.
All right, folks. We'll be right back to our live audience. Stick around into our podcast fans. You're about to be hearing words from a podcast that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
And we're back. Welcome back, everybody. What did you do during breakout?
Bob, during the break, would you believe I got my ID and I registered.
Registered to vote.
Registered to vote.
What'd you register to do?
One day too late.
I'm going to New York City after this, Bob.
Oh, don't start.
I know, that makes a start. But, Bob, it was a good break. I got a lot done. Got some grocery shopping done during that break there. How about you?
You know what I did during break count? I took a swim.
Took a swim.
In the lock.
What'd you find?
Nothing.
Ah, that's a bummer. What'd you do, Chuck?
I went to Portillo's.
Got the Portillo's.
Hey, got the Portillo's.
Got a combo. Got a combo with hot and mozzarella.
Which leads us in here, Bob.
Yes. All right. So that's a good place to start. And this is going to be a good wrap-up of Paranormal Researchers Month. Now, I wanted to have a guest every week that didn't pan out, and there's a paranormal researcher in Chicagoland, or there was a paranormal researcher in Chicagoland who is legitimately and truthfully the godfather of the paranormal in Chicago. He was the guy. He was everything. So the best place to start is in the beginning, and I have an article here from DePaul, which is where his alma mater was and where he started his tours. He had it's pretty interesting because I found an article or a flyer for his first ghost tour, and it's DePaul Geographical Society Chicago Ghost Tour with Richard Crow Tour Guide. Well, it's not the first one, but it's an early one. October 24th, 1981, departs from at 6:30 p.m. from DePaul Schmidt Academic Center and returns after midnight. And guess how much it cost back in a ghost tour back in 1981? Chuck, how much?
A shiny nickel.
Ooh, no.
It's like $3.
No, a little bit more than that.
$12.
What year is this?
$13.
$13. You are correct.
$13.
In what year?
Makes perfect sense.
1981.
Yeah, that's probably right.
$13 to take a ghost tour of Richard Crow.
Hey. Steal nowadays.
On October 26, 1973, the DePaulia reported a wild and far-out experience was coming to DePaul, courtesy of DePaul Geographical Society, a ghost tour named Field Trip in Ghastly Geography. The tour was designed by DePaul alum Richard Crow. The excursion took place October 27th and was not only the first ghost tour of Chicago, but also marked the beginning of Crow's illustrious career as Chicago's most famous ghost hunter. The origins of Richard Crow's interest in ghosts and paranormal stretched all the way back to his childhood when he listened to his grandparents tell ghost stories of Hungary and Poland. His interest grew more as a student at Quigley Preparation Seminary South, where he befriended Reverend John Nicola, who would later serve as a technical advisor on the film adaptation The Exorcist. During his undergraduate years at DePaul, Crow studied English as well as and was a well-known and active presence on campus, participating in a multitude of activities, including prominent role on the Student Activity Council. He also wrote for the DePaulia. And while many of his articles covered topics one would expect a college student in the late 1960s, politics and university issues, his interest in the paranormal still bled through now and then. A November 1967 article told the story of Snippy, a horse whose death may have been a result of a UFO. A January 1968 article, meanwhile, gave through the overview of the Bigfoot legend. With this in mind, it was unsurprising, following his graduation from DePaul with a master's degree in 1973, the university's Geographical Society approached Crow about designing a ghost tour for one of their fall field trips. Anyone who happened to catch the DePaulia snippet about the ghost tour the day before its occurrence would have been out of luck. The tour had a waiting list of 200 people, and it's only had 50 people allowed on the first bus trip, ranged from Geographical Society members to Chicago radio personalities. The tour lasted more than 4 hours and visited 8 sites, including the site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, the road walked by Resurrection Mary in Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. The DePaulia staff member on the tour noted, while no ghosts or etherical beings were spotted, Mr. Crow made the trip quite entertaining. It was Crow's skills as a storyteller that enabled him to become Chicago's first full-time ghost hunter. The October 1973 tour served as the starting point for Crow's business, Chicago Supernatural Tours, which became so successful that Crow was a full-time researcher into the unknown by 1979. Crow stayed active with the DePaul community through the 1980s, continuing to host his tour for the Geographical Society and giving talks at the university on topics ranging from ghosts to Irish folklore. Mm. Chicago Supernatural Tour buses even continued to use DePaul parking lots as their starting locations for several years. It did not take long for Crow to become an international expert on the paranormal. Every Halloween season, Crow would appear on countless radio and talk shows, including Oprah and Unsolved Mysteries. He was a Halloween staple in the Chicago Tribune, with countless issues featuring profiles and interviews focused on Crow. The newspaper credited Crow with both creating Chicago's first ghost tour, with popularizing the Resurrection Mary myth, which prior to inclusion of his tour was a little local known fable. Today, the Resurrection Mary is arguably Chicago's most famous ghost. In a 1986 interview with the DePaulia, Crow explained that his process of finding stories for tours and research. A great deal of research originated in the same way most legends do, the oral tradition. A large portion of these came from local folklore and stories told to him by both friends and strangers. He also scoured newspapers, noting locations for car accidents or murders were often a prime place for a good ghost hunt. In other words, Crow's success lay in his ability to find and tell a compelling story. No ghosts need apply. And we'll talk a little bit about Richard Crow's end of his life after that. This is more or less one of his obituaries, but we'll get to that here in a moment. So what do you, Chuck, what do you think about all of that? That is a very, very impressive resume, to say the least.
Yeah, I think, you know, so I'll start with, for me, I think growing up, you know, in Chicagoland, having the Chicago media, Richard Crow and his appearances in Chicago media around Halloween was definitely sort of my catalyst to the paranormal, to getting interested in those things. He was such an amazing storyteller, but you would see him on the morning news. You'd hear him on the radio in the evenings. He basically became the face of Halloween in Chicagoland. You couldn't turn on the TV on Halloween without seeing him. And that for me really was sort of one of my memories as a child, is I couldn't wait for Halloween. First thing in the morning, turn on the news and all day long, see Richard Crow telling stories throughout the day. So that really for me was always sort of a special memory. He even would come on WJOB here in the afternoons, and tell stories about the region, which again, it's always fun to hear stories about the place that you live. But I think the thing that differentiated him from so many others was his research foundation. Even I was listening to there's some great old interviews with him, with Eddie Schwartz on YouTube and things like that. And the amount of research and, you know, the homework he did on these stories, like Resurrection Mary, there was his entire life. People were trying to figure out who she was, you know, the whole story, the person behind the legend. Every time he would tell one of these stories, he would get into the backstory. It wasn't salacious. It was here, you know, he tried to keep the story sort of grounded in some sort of reality of what's the basis. As you said, like when, you know, that's one of the things about oral history is everybody adds their own little flair. So something happens 100 years ago. And by the time you hear the story, it's completely changed. Right. So that's sort of the thing. He always wanted to get to the root of the stories to understand where they came from. And even just in his delivery and his matter of factness of the story, I think that's what made what he did, so sort of, I'd say, believable, you know? And so people would look at him as an authority, but he also didn't go over the top with it. He tried to keep it, again, grounded in some sort of science and some sort of reality, which is, I think, why everybody respected him as a researcher.
That's impressive, man. And that's a really cool thing and a really good basis to have it on. And anybody could tell a story, but when you're confident in telling a story is when people start to pay more attention to you. And the amount of research that he has put into his work, as you were saying, is comparable to not many.
Well, and that's the thing, is that his tour, even if you didn't believe in ghosts, his tour was still interesting. It was going to places like Hull House and Red Lion Pub and
Circus Train.
So he would go to Showman's Rest, where the victims of the crash here in Hammond or Gary are buried. But again, it was an interesting, almost like an architectural tour, almost like a history tour of Chicago. You talked about St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So I don't know, have you ever been to the spot like where Dillinger was shot?
Yeah, I was there recently.
What everybody that goes there feels an energy there. Even, you know, even now, like it was a Qdoba for a long time. We'd go and get Qdoba and go outside. And I don't know if it still is or not, but there's still an energy there. There's still even the Iroquois fire downtown off of, I think, State Street. There's still an energy there in that alley that to this day, people that don't even know it say, there's a weird energy in this alley, right? I mean, and that's sort of the thing, is that he would just bring you there. Like, you didn't have to believe anything I'm telling you. Just come here and feel it for yourself. Or even there's stories of him. He would go to Jackson Park, I think it was. The Clarence Darrow was a U.S. attorney, and people would often see his ghost walking through the park. Even Richard Crowe's tour one time saw it. They tried to chase him, which, as we know from Ghostbusters, don't chase ghosts. But so, I mean, that was the thing. It's like, just come with us. Or they go to the Red Lion Pub, and people would smell things or hear things. And so it was really just, you know, the tour was just, let's go there and see it for ourselves. And I think that's what was so cool about it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you were on one of the tours.
So I did not get to go because he was doing over 21 tours. And unfortunately, right around, and I don't remember how it worked out, right around the time I was old enough to go on the tour, I think he took a break from the tour. I forget what happened.
I forget what year it was. I was younger. I was maybe a teenager, and I went with my parents and my sister. We did the Richard Crowe tour.
Well, so he would
this
do
the
tour
the end.
Right. So he would do tours where he had to be over 21. They go to Red Lion Pub and hang out and stuff like that.
No, we went to Portillo's.
So you went to Portillo's instead. Yeah. Right.
But, you know, we went to, as you mentioned, Showman's Arrest, Resurrection Cemetery. There was a couple others. And, of course, the stop at Portillo's. You got to get some lunch to fuel up ghost researching. But, you know, at the time, I know my mom read his books, and I knew a little bit about him. But looking back at it now, what an honor that was to be on a tour with him. I mean, there's many opportunities out there to take ghost investigation tours now. But
even here in the region.
To be with Richard Crowe. I look back on it, and I was like, wow, that was pretty neat.
Yeah. No, I definitely, it was one of those things where I always, there was like one of those, there was a special tour, and I forget what happened. It was back in the days before I had Google Calendar, and I guess I went on the wrong Saturday or whatever happened. I forget. But
this is during MySpace.
Yeah, during MySpace. Like I said, even if he didn't go on the tour, he was sort of that presence in Chicago media. He would come down, even one of the things I was listening to, he was coming down to, you know, to a VFW here in Highland to give a presentation on ghosts in the region and stuff like that. So he definitely kept our area as part of that, the bigger Chicagoland. So he knew those stories as well.
And you figure, too, back in the day, there was no social media. There was no internet. Right. It was all radio, local TV appearances. And, you know, this was that time when not a lot of people were doing it, right? And
that was the thing.
Capitalized on
that. Yeah, when he started in the 70s, I mean, there was no Googling things like that. It was like, go down to the library and see if there's a book on ghosts in your area. So it's like, if you wanted to learn about Resurrection Mary or the ghost in your community, you had to go to the library. Maybe there was a book on it. Maybe you go, you know, how do you find those things out? And so he really was sort of, like I said, the godfather of all of that. I mean, I would almost go so far as to say everything that's kind of come out since then, you know, ghost hunting, TV shows and all these, I mean, a lot of that comes from that time period. There really wasn't any of that besides Richard Crowe. He was the guy.
Especially here in Chicago.
Yeah, especially here in Chicago. He was the guy. So I think a lot of it, I think we owe him a debt of gratitude. Everybody that makes a living talking about paranormal anybody that makes paranormal part of their life, we all owe, you know, the late Richard Crowe like a debt of gratitude because he was like the godfather of the whole thing.
I do. Whenever somebody asks me who do I got to think about my career, there's two, Art Bell and Richard Crowe.
Yeah.
I'm in Chicagoland, and Art Bell was the paranormal talk show host. Should count. Remind me to do an episode about Art Bell and sometime.
Yeah. I actually just talked to another guy in the business that knows him from Pahrump, Nevada.
No kidding.
Yes. So
yeah, then George Norrie took over after that, which maybe someday we'll get to talk.
But again, I mean, there's so many hours of Art Bell. I've been catching up on that as well, and I think Richard was on a couple times with him, and so you can find that on YouTube.
And I know Chuck. I know you sent me. I'm probably gonna talk, and we'll. If you want to catch, though, I mean, YouTube is available. I mean, there's Steve and Johnny's show.
So he did many hours with Eddie Schwartz. And what I found was you can pull up the transcript and then search Indiana, and you can find him talking about. So he talked about the Klein Avenue ghost, talked about Reeder Road. I mean, all the things that's how we learned. That's how I learned about Reeder Road. That's how I learned about Klein Avenue and the circus train wreck and things like that, was hearing Richard Crow talk about it on Chicago media.
He's been on these airways before, although we don't have the tapes for that.
We don't. We didn't say that.
Sadly, that was post saving tapes, I think, but. That's another thing too. I mean, Bob, we're on the airwaves where Richard Crowe was talking. That's pretty neat.
It's a blessing to be able to have. We have a caller.
We have a caller on the air, Bob.
Caller, you're on the air.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Good evening, Bob and Count.
Bill. Hey, Bill. How are you?
And Chuck, I'm doing fine. I'm listening to your program, and a lot of memories are coming back because I took that tour in '84.
Wow.
No kidding.
I want to say, and I ran into that gentleman. We were at, it was on the tour because he stopped at different places. We stopped at the Warsaw Inn in Chicago.
Rest in peace.
That'd be cool to go stop at the Warsaw Inn there. Yeah.
Well, that's where I ran into him, and he gave me his card, and I started, and I think it took me a couple of years to get on, you know. Yeah. As you mentioned, there were a lot of people. But, that was interesting. I mean, especially our area here.
Yeah, so. No, for sure. I mean, wouldn't you guys agree? I mean, he had a lock on paranormal investigating here in the Chicagoland area.
Well, and like we were saying, though, is before that time, everything was sort of oral history. It was sort of urban legend. Somebody passed it down. There wasn't, we didn't have Google. We didn't have websites where you can just, find all this information and document it. So somebody had to do that research. Somebody had to build that foundation, and that was Richard Crow for this area.
Well, he was very knowledgeable on just talking to the man. And, he mentioned he went to DePaul and so forth and, for everything on that, but
do you remember some of the places that you went with him? Did you go to like Resurrection?
We went to Resurrection Cemetery, and I had been there because a cousin of mine lived in that area, so he took me out there, and we went saw the grave and so forth, and they had a little writing on the tombstone, what had happened, but. Yeah, we were at a few places. We were at a place called Tombstone Inn. It was at Holy Cross Cemetery.
Holy Cross, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Holy Cross was one of my favorite stories he would tell. I don't know, Bob, you remember any of the Holy Cross? So he would tell stories about, this is the one where the priests and the nuns would see like the cemetery breathing.
Yes.
And all sorts of weird things. That was one of the stories that always creeped me out. This idea of looking at a cemetery and the entire cemetery is like pulsating. They said it looked like it was breathing.
The people believe that they saw the caretaker and it had floating orbs around him at the cemetery as well.
Oh, you know about those orbs, though.
Yeah.
We love orbs.
I always appreciate it because, like you said, he would talk about what is the basis, what happened here. Obviously, if you know the story of like the circus train wreck here in the region or anything like that, is there's always he would find the foundation of it and sort of say here's where we think it started from. And again, Resurrection Mary, another interesting story because there's all these people that claimed, well, that was my that was my aunt or that was whoever, and they were always trying to figure out who that might have been or where that started.
But they took me there to I saw the grave Resurrection Mary and so. And I don't know, I got a little vibe or something. It was just standing there, just looking at this grave. And then the, the train wreck, I remember people saying back then, if the wind's blowing right, you can hear animal sounds.
Yeah. Well, and he debunked that one because what he found was if you go to Showman's Rest, and if the wind is just right, you'll hear the animals from Brookfield Zoo.
Yes.
So that was one of the ones he was able to debunk a little bit. But again, you know, it's a fun story. But, you know, stuff like that where you go in, okay, you know, yeah, I'm hearing animals, and you realize Brookfield Zoo is upwind a few miles.
Yeah, I used to listen to Eddie Schwartz, and when Richard Kerr was on, I had my tape recorder. I was recording this just to have that, so...
Yeah, I'm glad that people did that, because like I said, you can go on YouTube and there's hours and hours of Richard and Eddie talking about all these stories, some of which I've never even heard, because I wasn't allowed to be up that late back when I was a kid to be up till 3 a.m. listening to Eddie Schwartz.
Frowned upon, yeah.
Yeah, so, but yeah. No, it's nice memories to go down that.
Yeah. When did he pass away, do you know?
2012, I believe.
Yes.
And he actually was buried at Resurrection Cemetery.
Yes, you can go see his...
Oh, really? You can go visit his grave.
It's got a big old black grave marker, and it's got a stone that says Crow on it.
Yeah.
Well, we got to go tonight. After the show, Bill, we'll meet you down there.
Get arrested. Yeah. Don't go in there.
Just make sure to say something. But like I say, I was enjoying the program, and so forth. I just thought I know last week I didn't call. I was listening to you guys, but
it's okay, but Bill. We appreciate you listening.
Well, like I say, I'm interested in that stuff. Just somebody tells me I know in East Chicago here there's a lot of things, and so especially by Club Cuyahoga there, But I'm sorry. And by the way, I'm sorry I didn't make it down. I had another commitment, but
it's okay, Bill.
We'll see you on the next one.
I've met Mr. Feraghi. I got to meet you two guys.
So, we're totally different than that guy. Yeah, that guy owes me money.
Okay.
All right, Bill.
Listen, you guys take care.
Take care.
You too, Chuck.
Mr. Feraghi still owes me a couple of drinks, I think.
He owes me a couple of drinks, too.
But it was interesting. Like I said, it was always fun to hear somebody like Richard Crowe telling stories about, again, like Reeder Road. That was the first time I had heard sort of the in-depth story about, the different aspects of it, the disappearing house, the train that would never come, or even the Klein Avenue ghost, which I had never heard that one before either. Diana the Dunes, I think, is one that he would talk about. I'm trying to think of what other ones he talked about here in the region. Do you remember any?
Crown Point Jail.
Crown Point Jail. So he did talk about, I sent you that clip. It's on there. You can find that on YouTube. He talked about the history. Again, I didn't even realize that at one point the jail, I forgotten that it was a restaurant at one point, a speakeasy.
Yeah.
And sort of that. So he talked quite a bit about the jail, which again, everybody's probably been there once or twice. And that's a fun visit.
And Bob, Sandy, I think, offered the invitation.
Sandy offered us to do a live show at the jail.
I'm in. I'm
so
in.
I want to do it before it gets too cold. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I like
It's cold anyway.
It's going to be cold no matter what.
No, I actually, I did an interview at the old Crown Point Jail. That was a lot of fun to be in Dillinger's cell, and they did played with your different the obelisk and the different toys and the DDP and stuff. I think that's just for me. Like that really, like I said, Richard was sort of the catalyst for me, and that was just one of my great memories growing up. And I think a lot of people probably have that. People that have that interest in the paranormal, if you think back, that's probably where that came
from.
Comes
from him, yeah.
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 Richard Crowe also had a play done after him. Did you guys know that?
I've heard of that. I didn't know much about it.
It's hard to find any info about it, but I was listening to one of those Richard Crowe interviews, because there's countless. You can go on YouTube and spend a whole day just listening to Richard Crowe interviews.
Oh, yeah.
But he was a part of, somebody did a play called The Wives of Ghost Hunter Richard Crowe.
Oh, wow.
And the play was about different ghost ladies telling the story of how they became ghosts. And at every show, at the end, they would do a seance. And this play ran for so little bit of time in October.
Really?
I just figured that was interesting. And Richard Crowe also believed in werewolves.
Werewolves.
Yes, he believed in werewolves. He was talking about the sightings on 95th and Keene. So apparently there was a werewolf sighting at 95th and Keene that I didn't know about. But
how about that? Maybe that was too many nights at the tombstone there. But you never know. There could have been a werewolf wandering around.
So it's interesting, too, that he was doing 21 and over tours, but Richard Crowe was also known for being family-friendly.
He was.
I found this article from 2010 in the Chicago Parent written by Liberty Nelson. And what it is it just says, Richard T. Crow is not your average Chicagoan. He is a professional ghost hunter who lives in a haunted house in Chinatown. And for the last 37 years, Crow has been running his very own Chicago supernatural tours. And I quote, it has never been done before, Crow says. Nobody has ever taken people around on a bus to haunted places before. Crow wants parents to know that his tours are family friendly. Ghost stories are great teaching devices for kids, Crow says. Kids love ghosts, and the tours are open for children of all ages. Though he recommends age 10 and up simply because kids can get antsy during a 4-hour tour. Yeah. Crow offers 4 different ghost tours, including his newest edition, the Chicago Supernatural Cruise on the Chicago River in Lake Michigan. He tells tales of ghost ships on Lake Michigan and Lake Michigan's monster that was seen in Evanston and Hyde Park. This one was done from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Fridays through Sundays, 1 to 5, and a special day on October 31st. He also does tours talking about Rosemary's Baby and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So that's always interesting stuff, and it's very unfortunate that his website is down. You used to be able to go to ghosttours.com.
That was a fun website.
You got to use the Wayback Machine.
Go back to the Wayback Machine and see if they got
it. Made them ghost sounds, and like, ooh.
Go on their website? Did you remember that one, Kyle?
I remember it. Yeah, because it would do the eerie. They would have the, it was like a typical 90s website, early 2000s. It was like the little dancing ghost with the ghost sounds of the 90s.
We got to find that.
I think, yeah.
There's we'll find it on the Wayback Machine. Yeah.
But
I'm pulling it up right now while you guys are talking.
So I guess
that's
here's
a great thing to be able to go between kids and adults alike and tell ghost stories.
So one of the things I was thinking about though is it fair to call him a ghost hunter?
No, I would call him a paranormal
investigator.
He's a researcher and a tour guide.
It's interesting because everybody calls him a ghost hunter. Again, semantics, but you know, he's never actively hunted ghosts. He may have had some people chase one down occasionally. But not necessarily a ghost hunter.
I'm trying to pull up. Here we go. From October 3rd, my birthday, 2005, he had his website. And oh, my goodness.
Oh, I can see the colors. Turn that around.
Look at the... I don't know if you guys can see this very well on the screen. Let me...
You got the ghostly background.
You got the ancient gifts.
I don't know why it was. We had to make all the text in yellow on
the
website.
That was the website. I bet it makes sound too, Bob, I think.
I'm sure it does. I don't have the sound on, but look at that.
You'll have to post that link in your YouTube now that we can do that. Yeah, that brings back some. That's probably made on Angel Fire or something like that.
It was called ghosttours.com, and it's hosted by international renowned ghost hunter himself, Richard T. Crow. Hmm. Oh, this is great. I do have his. So he put out a book, right? Which is called. Actually, just got a picture sent to me of it. Chicago's Spirit Guide to the Supernatural. Chicago Street Guide to the Supernatural, Ghost Curses and Jinxes. I've bought the last copy on Amazon for $12, and it's in red condition. It's not in pristine condition, but these books can go for $80, $90, $100. So I was pretty proud of that.
We'll be talking to eBay after this. Hey, I got to point something out here. I don't know what's going to hit at the 10 o'clock mark. We're on YouTube. If you're listening on the radio, you got the access to the YouTube. We'll go into overtime here. We're going to call Bob After Dark Overtime, WGLB 1230 on the YouTube. Because, again, I don't know what's going to happen at 10 o'clock. But this conversation will carry a little bit over into the 10 o'clock hour. Of course, before, though, pick up your Bob After Dark stickers. And happy birthday to my mom tomorrow.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Mama Count. We appreciate it.
Mama Count. But if it gets cut off on the radio, that's where you find us on YouTube. But Richard Crow, all around, a thumbs up of a guy, it seems like.
Yes. I have a couple, an interview here I want to read that I think the Oaklawn Patch wrote about Richard Crow. And they had a couple questions for him that I thought would be interesting to share on the show. Where do ghosts go in winter? Do they hibernate after Halloween?
They do.
Crow says it's like that age-old question. If a tree falls in the forest but no one's around to hear it, doesn't make a sound. The ghosts are definitely still there no matter what season. One of the great Christmas time ghost stories I like to tell visitors on my tour is about a schooner captain who would sail in Christmas trees every year.
The Christmas tree story, yeah.
Yeah, sell them to public at the Clark Street Bridge. One year, his ship sunk during a storm, and it went to the bottom of Lake Michigan, but a ghostly vessel resembling his schooner, the Rouse Simmons, has been spotted sailing back to Chicago forever, trying to get to port to sell Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm. We got to answer that question, though. Where do ghosts go during the winter?
They don't hibernate.
They hibernate.
Oh!
Hibernate!
Oh, my
goodness.
We just
got kicked off the air for that.
And that's my...
Yeah, boo.
That's good. I like that one.
I'm here all week.
Tip your waiter.
Be back on Monday.
If you ever conducted a ghost tour including only South Suburban haunts, which would be this neck of the woods, what would you include? Resurrection Cemetery and the Willow Book Ballroom, which is no longer there.
Right. Bachelor's Grove.
Yeah. Let's see here. Sacred Heart Cemetery on Keene Avenue in Hickory Hills, where the legendary werewolf supposedly dwells. We'd head along 95th Street near LaGrange Road by the forest preserves, where spectral horses and riders are seen. St. James Sag and Cemetery, better known as Monk's Castle. That's on 107th and Archer, where strange figures dressed in monk's garbs are witnessing walking around in groups on F3 on top of the hill at night. He didn't put Chet's Melody Lounge. I feel like that needs to be a staple of every Southside Chicago tour. But I co-host one with Graveside Paranormal, and we hit up several spots like that. So, good choices. Hmm. And then here is the final question. And this one's a good one to kind of end on before we read it about his obituary, is what's the strangest encounter you've ever had on one of your tours? And Richard Crow said, I led a daytime walking tour of Chinatown in 2007, and while leaving a store, observed a small Chinese woman not far away from me, about 80 years old or so. She had been brought to my attention long before as a known ghost. Our eyes met for a moment, but then someone distracted me and I looked away, and when I looked back, she was gone. I also once had a tour bus full of professional clowns, which was kind of surreal, and there was also that time that everyone on board just came from a Star Trek convention. They were all wearing Spock ears. Talk about spooky.
Now, I had a similar instance. I work in Greektown. I had a similar instance one time of a man that looked like he was in, I'm going to say, period, like 1920s, like basically wearing a three-piece suit. Ooh. Looked completely, I mean, he had the mutton chops, his hair, everything about him was out of place. And he caught my eye, and I saw him long enough to go, man, that guy's really dressed up. He looks kind of out of place. And then by the time I thought about it, I looked back, he was gone.
Yeah.
So again, like weird stuff like that, and you don't think about it. And again, did I see a ghost or I just see some guy, you know, wearing a suit? I don't know. But it's just sort of like one of those things. Same thing with like Resurrection Cemetery. I used to drive through there, and I saw a lady one time, not realizing where I was. She wasn't in all white or anything like that. But again, same kind of idea. It's like I saw a lady walking down the street, and then a couple blocks later, I realized, wait, am I where I think I am? You know, same idea. It's like if you're not paying attention, you know. So.
All right. And then unfortunately, the world no longer has Richard Crow a part of it. And it's really interesting because how big Richard Crow was, his obituary made it all the way to CBS.
Hey. Oh, okay.
Which, you know, you take it how you will, but it's one of the five big networks in Chicago. And his obituary was so popular, made it there. So I'm going to read the obituary from CBS News. This is from June 8th, 2012. Famed ghost hunter Richard Crow has died. He was 64 years old. Crow's sister Joanne posted on his Facebook page that he died on Wednesday of complications from pancreatic cancer. Crow was the leader of Chicago Supernatural Tours, series of bus tours. His website, he organized the first bus ghost tour in the world after getting his master's degree from DePaul University in 1973. He had also led boat cruises, appeared on TV programs, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, to unsolved mysteries, talking about haunted places, ghosts, and other unexplained supernatural mysteries. Former WGN 720 AM radio host Steve King and Johnny Putman wrote on their blog that in their 27 years hosting a late night radio show, Richard was one of their most requested guests. Every year, starting around September, the calls, letters, and texts and emails would begin. Is Richard Crowe going to be on with you this Halloween? When's Richard Crowe going to come back on? And have you announced a date of Richard Crowe yet? King and Putman wrote that it was largely due to Richard Crowe that Resurrection Mary became the legend she is today. A legend strong enough to that even local police officers would call in with new sightings to add to Richard's files. Crowe will be buried at Resurrection Cemetery, which that's where he's at to this day.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting one of the other things I saw in his obituary that I didn't know. So they're talking about, so he traveled the world. So he went all over, telling ghost stories and learning more about local legends and things like that. Said Richard lived most of his adult life in a reportedly haunted house on the southwest side where he grew up, surrounded by haunted objects and artifacts, including, according to legend, the bars from Resurrection Cemetery that were bent by the famous Phantom. So if you don't know that story, one night was it like basically a security guard saw somebody passing through the gates, and when they came back in the morning, two bars were bent. Basically, it looked like somebody had grabbed them and split them apart.
Yes.
Which would be nearly impossible for a person to do, and they also looked like sort of melted or burned or something like that.
Burned with them, the handprints.
And at some point, and they didn't, they left them there for a long time, and finally, so many people would come to see the bars, they finally said, we're tired of it. They cut them out, and they disappeared, and nobody knew where they went.
No.
The legend was they ended up at Richard Crowe's house.
Wow.
Yes, our Archdiocese of Chicago did not like those bars so much that they said every time that they would replace them, they would end up damaged again, and every time they would say a dump truck hit it. Every time. Dump truck hit the bars. And how many dump trucks can keep hitting bars, you know? But that's the story of Richard Crowe, and it's somebody I never got to take one of his tours. Count Panic did.
How about that, Bob? I don't want to brag, but I did go on one.
You did get to go on one of his tours. Richard Crowe was somebody that I aspire to be in my career, so a positive influence on the community and being able to just kind of like share the love of the paranormal with the community at large. And he leaves behind a legacy.
Yeah.
I work for, I subcontract through a company called Graveside Paranormal where we do ghost bus tours. And it's kind of cool to be doing them and following the footsteps of Richard Crowe to this day and still being able to follow his work. I mean, his book is long out of print, but if you could find it, I recommend picking it up and giving it a read because I was going to bring it for the show and I completely left it behind. Well, so
you're going to have to let me borrow it. I can't wait.
Yes, absolutely. So, Count Panic.
Yeah.
What final words on Richard Crowe?
Richard Crowe, legacy that will live on forever. And again, wish we had those WGLB tapes, but there's plenty of clips and whatnot on the YouTube. And speaking of YouTube, thanks for all joining the YouTube chat tonight as well.
Absolutely.
And those listening to the radio and the podcast. But Richard Crowe, what a legacy, Chuck.
I was going to say, I mean, come on. So you let Panic pick a topic.
Yes.
It went pretty well.
Yep.
So I
we got through a whole
topic.
Show. You brought me in. It went well. So maybe we let Count Panic pick some more shows in the future.
He can pick as many shows as he wants. He knows that.
We're going to do Gremlins next week.
I've already done a Gremlins
episode. We're going to do it again.
We're doing another Gremlins episode.
How about the as Art mentioned, the creature at the Roxana Canal.
We can go hunt it. We should just go. We'll go hunting. And we'll go to the Little Calumet River at night.
Well, you know, we could do. We did a Panic in the Reach on it. We'll have our friend MX come on and talk about the Bigfoot that was seen.
Oh, the Bigfoot sighting, yes.
In Gibson Woods back in the 70s.
Yes. I could stretch all of this topic for 1 hour.
Hey, this guy could talk. Chuck knows him. He'll just ramble on for an hour, but I think it could work out.
Chuck, do you have any closing
No, well,
words
thanks. Thanks
Crowe?
You guys for having me. It was really nice to reminisce about
past
Richard Crowe. It was
too.
Yeah, it's definitely past my bedtime. But it was nice because, like I said, it was a nice memory from my childhood and doing a little homework for the show. It was nice to reminisce and hear his voice again and kind of just remember that nice part, that nice little part of my life that led me to where I am today. So thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. I'm glad we finally got it on the air.
Yes, yeah. I'm glad we finally got the episode done.
And you too.
All right, folks, thanks for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and the team, we just want to wish you guys
wait,
a good night.
Now I got wait. Hold on, Bob, because I got to go back to non-copyrighted spooky music here. So let's see.
All right.
Let's see. Non-copyrighted spooky music.
Play the beginning of Night of the Living Dead. We know that's not copyrighted.
Copy. Coming to get you, Barbara.
Is that public domain?
Public, yeah, it's... By
one of the greatest public domain stories ever. Yeah, when you rebuild your title, make sure to put the little copyright logo in the corner.
I thought that was exactly. Well, Steamboat Willie, we could also play that.
And Steamboat Willie. Yes.
But Bob, whenever you're ready, go ahead and close out the show.
Okay, now I could go back. Go All right, folks.
Keep that, keep that in the podcast. Though.
On behalf of me and Count Pack, we just want to wish you sweet dreams. And my mom, good night. I hope you have sweet dreams. And Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing in the TIFF. I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.